The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
This week, we're talking about Volkswagen's next GTI and why Jaguar wants to rebrand its controversial rebrand. Plus, Apple's plans to take over your car, a startup that's in big trouble, and why American auto execs say you will be driving a Chinese car. But first, Nissan's massive layoffs just got even bigger. Welcome to the Big Three. Welcome back to the Big Three. This week, we have a special guest, Kyle Cheromka from The Drive.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
And as always, Bart Bindley-Meyer.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah. Kyle, thank you so much for stepping in for Nolan.
Of course, big shoes, big head, but, you know, I have both of those things, so we're in good shape.
What's your cap size?
Extra large.
So we're talking like 8 1/4.
I don't do numbers. I just go with letters, man.
How many open holes are there on
max,
the back?
Maxed out. We're on the last. We're on the last clasp there. Yeah.
I think I'm like one or two clicks in.
Oh, so, wow.
All right, you got a,
must be nice.
You got a big head?
Not really. I got a, compared to a lot of, it's not really something you measure, but when I do put on somebody else's hat, I'm like, it's a bit big on me. So I also don't have much hair. You got a lot.
I measure it every day. It's really important to my self-esteem. Yeah.
For those not in the know, Kyle is the editor-in-chief of The Drive.
Yes.
Our sister company. Kyle, what'd you do this weekend?
I spent a lot of time driving the new Lotus Emira, the AMG version.
So that is yours outside.
Yeah, that is mine outside. Oh, you saw that. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's still outside.
I keyed it already.
It has not disappeared on me. Yeah. Yeah. So I spent probably like, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours just bombing around up on ACH.
So you're saying it's fun.
It's fun. It's ridiculous to say a Lotus isn't fun, but it is not as fun as the supercharged V6 version because it's just, there is just no low end punch at all. And in a chassis like that, like you get on the gas, you want it to react immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's a pretty substantial turbo lag. And there's really nothing. It has 400 horsepower. It does not feel like it if you're under like 4,000 RPM. You really need to be rigging it out to get anywhere with it.
So there's an AMG engine in it?
Yeah. The Lotus, for this last hurrah of an analog sports car, they have the Toyota V6 version, and they have a four-cylinder, 2-liter AMG turbo.
And that makes 400 horsepower?
400 horsepower, yeah.
Wow.
But they don't do anything to it. It's just out of the box. I asked them about it, and they were like, no, AMG doesn't let us open it up. So it's just dropped in, you know, switched orientation. Actually, no, it's not orientation because it's mid-engine. So same setup, and they have a DCT with it. You can't get it with the manual. DCT also not that great, honestly, but you know, nothing drives like a Lotus.
Yeah.
The handling is incredible. It's got that hydraulic steering. So it was a good time. Not going to complain about driving a free Lotus.
Yeah.
But what I color am going is to it? Complain about it anyway. It's a dark green. I don't know the actual name of the color, but it's like British racing green-esque with a tan interior, which happens to be my all-time favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Colorway, so. Yeah, it got the job done.
It's a classic combo.
But I was up there with a buddy in a new 911 hybrid, the GTS hybrid. And that thing is about 130 more horsepower. But it I mean, so he's losing me on the straights like immediately. Mm-hmm. But even in the corners, I mean, like the 911, granted it's a $200,000 car as optioned, but it is so much easier to drive fast. And the Lotus, it's because of the hydraulic steering, you are reacting to every single road bump, imperfection, divot. It going in a straight line at high speeds on a road like that can be a challenge. So
yeah, I can just like see
a lot of this. Yeah, a lot of this. But no, it was a good time. It was a good time.
Well, should we get into it?
Let's do it.
Nissan is laying off 15% of its global workforce. This is an escalation of the 9,000 employees Nissan said that they would be letting go recently. Now, roughly 20,000 employees will be affected. That's a huge layoff. Its total number of plants are being reduced from 17 to 10, which is a huge percentage of it. Nissan is abandoning plans for a battery plant in Japan. They plan to complete the job cuts and plant closures by 2027.
Are these happening domestically too?
There definitely will be cuts in the U.S.
Yes. Yeah. So this not only affects the Japan plants, but also their plant in Tennessee, I'm assuming. This amount of layoffs hasn't happened since Carlos Ghosn took over. And you talked to him in person, not in person, well, but on Zoom.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
Because when he did this, it did effectively save the brand.
Yeah.
At a cost of like cheapening everything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's still salvageable?
It's really tough. I mean, there are a lot of parallels here because Ivan Espinoza, the new CEO, he's as young as Ghosn was when they took over. He's, I think, 46 or 47. So their youngest CEO since then. A lifelong Nissan guy came up through, I think, the Mexican division and then ran Nismo for a time. Yep. And like,
They were like, they're when he first took over, they were like, he's a car guy. Don't worry.
Yeah, no, yeah. He drives a Z to work. Yeah. Don't worry about it. And you know, like they are saying a lot of the things you say when you are trying to execute a really ambitious turnaround plan. You need everyone to buy into it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's totally fair to say that Ghosn's turnaround came entirely from just cheapening everything, because there was a period in the mid 2000s where they were putting out really compelling products. And
yeah,
you remember Nissan in like the mid aughts, like surprisingly cool.
Wasn't that kind of research or like product of what happened in the late 90s rolling over into the 2000s, though?
A little bit for sure. But it was really at the financial crisis and afterwards that they really went hard on the incentives and the discounts and became known as like the budget brand, like
subprime the bargain basement,
subprime loans, exactly. So listen, it's a huge company. There's a lot of money invested in it already that people don't want to just like say, call it quits. Like Nissan doesn't need to exist anymore. But it's really hard to see in today's landscape how you can cut your way to relevancy. You know, every company has scaled down their platforms. Every company has tried to get more efficient. Like they're not saying anything that no one else isn't doing.
Yeah, that they're exploiting.
And so to get out of the hole they're currently in, it's like you do need some other X factor besides we're just going to start doing what everyone else was doing for the last decade and hope for the best. So
but if they're making budget cuts, then they're probably not developing new cars. Well, they did talked about the R36.
Didn't go
a little bit.
So you, as a matter of speaking, talked to Ghosn.
I did.
Hasn't he? He's been pretty vocal about his opinions.
He has. It was actually funny because I talked to him in 2021. Wow. So that was four years ago, right? So a lot has happened. His life hasn't changed that much. He's still sitting in Lebanon.
Well, he's in a different country.
Lobbing criticisms at people across the country, across the ocean. Yeah. But I asked him straight up because he was already on his beat back then. I was like, all right, so you got arrested in 2018. You know what? Given the timeline of product decisions, some of the stuff we're seeing Nissan do now started while you were CEO. Mm-hmm. So how do we square you saying that like they ruined everything after you left with the fact that some of these things were set in motion? He didn't really have an answer for that. He was just like, you know, they became boring and mediocre. They weren't like that, but they are now. And he just kind of talked around it.
Have you seen my Altima?
Yeah, exactly. He still has a Patrol. I did ask him that. I was like, do you still drive a Nissan? Yeah. He's like, I love the Patrol. I did the Patrol. I'm responsible for the Patrol.
I was smuggled out of the country in a Patrol.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing about these product decisions and development cycles is that you're working on like a 4, 5, 6 year delay. But you look at the the Z, for example, like that's just a heavily updated version of the old car. It has the same exact like infotainment stack, the same like triple gauge clusters on top of the dash. So it's not like they, you know, can't refresh things and freshen things up and try something different. But yeah, what they need is mass market relevance that doesn't come from being literally the cheapest car that you can buy.
And you need bumpers to stay on.
They need bumpers to stay on. They need something else to come and take the mantle from Altima drivers now. I mean, that car is going to go out of production in the next year or two. So we'll see. But the GTR too, that new hybrid GTR that we broke that story last month that they're committing for now to a hybrid GTR in the next 3 to 5 years. It's also a long time.
Yeah. If it's based on the R35 at all, like the new Z was based off the 370, like it's still going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they could shoehorn a hybrid system into that platform. It would take a lot of reengineering, and all this stuff costs money, man. You know, like all this stuff costs money. They don't have much of that.
That's true,
and it's not easy to borrow money right now
either. It kind of puts into the whole, like the Honda merger, into perspective too. Like if they're just holding on by like a thread, and I think that probably scared Honda. And there was like not much to gain out of Honda merging with them in the first place. So it's funny that that was even entertained.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to speak to the intricacies of the, like the Japanese, auto industry culture over there, like between companies and how they view each other. But certainly there's a lot of pride in Japan having a huge auto industry, and there is some level of, I think, support that they want to provide. A lot of these, you know, these companies work with each other, like Toyota and Subaru team up. Toyota, Mazda, but it's like Nissan has always been a company. Maybe Gon put this into the culture there that like they're very proud of being Nissan, and they don't like it when you refer to them as like, you know, second or third best. And so those talks with Honda got scuttled apparently because they were not accepting of like the second class. Right. Setup where they were going to be
subservient. You're going to be our baby brother.
Yeah, you're going to be our baby brother. You'll get the cast offs. You get to do a little this, little that. But man, it's next 3 or 4 years. Like we're going to see whether Nissan survives another decade. Yeah. I think. Yeah,
I think we're in such a like transitionary time, anyways, that it's not going to just affect Nissan. It's going to.
But it
a
also
lot of
seems like this is the only. You're not going to make this move unless it's your only move.
Yeah,
and so you can't borrow money. Because of the way things are right now, you can't merge. So where are we going to get the money that we need to make these big swings? It's got to be from how we make cars, where we make cars. So we got to let go of some people.
Yeah.
One of the other stories we broke last month was, it's not like a actual news item. It was more speculation. But when we talked to the executive who shared the news about the GTR, he mentioned, oh, by the way, like, you know, it is possible to co-develop this with Acura. And make it on the same platform as the new NSX, potentially, possibly. Like we're just talking here, right?
Yeah.
You know, anything's possible if you just want it enough.
Yeah,
he's like, just did I mention dudes. I'm a car guy? Yeah.
But like that, the fact that a company would say that just out of like, hey, by the way, like you know, don't forget that this is possible in the midst of these merger talks. Like, I think it speaks to how. They are really casting about for solutions.
What are we going to do?
How are we actually going to do this?
Nothing is
stuff?
Off the table.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, I mean, whatever, if they're all electric, the NSX, the next NSX is supposed to be all electric. If it's not, if it's mid engine, how do you make a combo mid front engine as the GTR? Like so many unanswered questions, but it's just really interesting to see a company speak so openly about like,
we don't know,
getting the help from other companies and being like, well, you know, Yeah, we're just talking. We're just talking. Yeah.
That's so funny that you guys just like basically making promises. So why is this happening? Well, Nissan's sales have been falling for quite a while now. For Nissan's two biggest markets, China and the U.S., domestic competition and steep discounting, respectively, have contributed to lost revenue. Nissan reported a $4.5 billion loss for the fiscal year on Tuesday last week. Yeesh.
It's not good.
That's be the guy in the boardroom with that chart.
All right, Gary, it's your time to shine.
directionally bad.
Yeah.
Also, the tariffs are making things worse, according to Nissan, who actually already have 3 plants accounting for 16,000 jobs in the U.S. We talked about the Tennessee one.
Smyrna.
As Kyle said, former CEO Carlos Ghosn spoke out against the company recently, saying that management makes decisions too slowly. He also criticized the attempted Honda merger as, quote, begging for help from a competitor, and accused Honda of trying to pull a, quote, a hostile takeover, succession style.
Mm. An interesting thing there is, that's why Ghosn got forced out and put in a box eventually.
Hostile takeover?
Because the people within Nissan thought that he was engineering a takeover from the Renault side, and that the French company was going to have a controlling stake in like this iconic Japanese brand. And all this is his version. There's a lot of evidence to back it up, but you know, we don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. But I do think him talking about this as a disguised takeover, like he is certainly trying to mess with perceptions right now and make it even more complicated for people. And using those words is certainly a code for like, this is exactly.
You think I was bad.
Yeah, you think I was bad. Yeah. This is, wait, I forget. Mm. Can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
Sure, we got bleeps.
You think I was bad? Like, this is f***ed. Like, you know, get, watch out. So
he's just like this bee that Nissan's is, like, come is. On, dude, get out of here.
he is a fascinating agent of chaos.
So what is Nissan's plan to move forward? The hope is to create a, quote, leaner business that can make rapid changes in response to the market. They're reducing their, that's a really polite way of saying like, you 20,000 employees. Let's get lean. They're reducing their number of platforms by almost half, from 13 to 7. The amount, like, it's crazy that they had 13 platforms.
It is nuts.
Like, that should have been years ago. Yeah. Why didn't we figure that out years ago? They're also simplifying their supply chain by securing more volume from fewer suppliers.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, they're doing everything. They're checking the boxes, I guess.
There's only so much you can do to simplify the process of building a car.
Yes.
It's incredibly complex with a huge amount of parts. And so, you know, you can take that as code for like, you know, we're going to decontent some things. We're going to, you know, the differences of those 13 platforms, a number of those are not for vehicles that are sold in the U.S. That's global. But it still is a fact that like, I don't think there's ever been a time that a company has condensed and the result hasn't been cars that feel a lot more similar.
Yes.
A lot less differentiation. And if you need differentiation to stand out in the market, it's like,
you're shooting yourself.
What are we doing here? You know, like, you know, the things they do have to be so on point now, that they're, you know, they need to do this, but they're removing their margin for,
the margin of error is so slim.
Yeah. Every move counts way more than it did a couple of years ago. They should follow like the bike model and just send people big boxes and they have to assemble their own car.
Knockdown kits.
Yeah.
Why not?
Like big sheets of plastic that you have to like pop off your parts from. It'd be fun. Volkswagen's first EV GTI has been confirmed for launch next year. And CEO Thomas Schaefer says it's going to be, quote, a monster.
Yeah,
you believe Thomas?
Okay, I have a question. Yeah. When was the GTI ever a monster?
Right.
That's such a weird way to put it.
Yeah.
And I'll let you finish your thing. It speaks to a lot. It's wrong.
It's going
to
be a monster.
German's
like the
right
traditional
now.
Russian fairy tale of the tiny monster that lives under kids' beds.
VW has been promising new GTI models for several of their cars for years. The only one we get in the U.S., the Golf, isn't slated to receive an EV conversion for another 5 years, however.
Which is ridiculous because they sold an electric Golf
the E-Golf.
5 years ago, and it didn't have much range, but it was a fantastic little thing.
Yeah, like, my friend Alyssa had one, and she loved it. She put a 15-inch sub in the back. The first VW to receive the EV GTI treatment will be the ID.2, everyone's favorite.
Yep, the favorite VW. Badge, the bearer of the torch, the ID.2.
Oh, you mean the monster? The monster ID.2?
So just this weekend, a board member of VW, like corporate the group, came out and was like, yeah, this whole ID thing, we're going to go back to real names.
Yeah.
So whatever it's called, it won't be the
It's going to be identification.
ID2.
The identification to.
Exactly. The ID was ID every one, and every was spelled out, and one was a number, and then the other one was ID to all, right? It was like these ridiculous names that they're putting on things.
Everything just turns into like a gamer tag at some point.
So I'll come back to the GTI in a second, but on the whole topic of names, the German automakers especially, and it has a lot to do with like the German approach to engineering and brand building, where it's like everything has to have a purpose. And so when they started to come out with the electric cars 4 or 5 years ago, there was a very strong belief within all of these German companies that they needed to not have the same names anymore. Yeah. They needed to get away from that. They needed to establish a new brand and differentiate. And I personally never understood that, because names have some, I mean, that's why they're making a GTI still.
Like, that's why, like, they made the Mustang,
the Mach-E.
The name, exactly. Like, the name matters. Like, you need that connection. And it was almost like watching these people scratch their heads, being like, why doesn't anyone care about the ID thing? Like, why the ID4? ID what? And it was just staring them in the face all along. Just like, make it doesn't matter. Make same name, two different powertrains. Like, who cares? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only thing that matters, is the consistency.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So with the GTI, it's like, okay, are they going to make an electric GTI? They're going to make something that is electric that's called a GTI. It's not really going to be like the GTI that we know of.
Like, the Taycan has a turbo.
Yeah. And so, like, it's also like electric hot hatch, not a proven concept yet. I mean, people point to the Ioniq 5N as an example, but that's an SUV.
That's
That wheelbase is longer than a Hyundai Palisade, right? So,
is it really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, I have a regular Ioniq 5 and I love it. It's a great car, but the turning circle is abysmal. Like, I can't make a U-turn on most LA streets because it's so wide.
Well, you could just do like a hurricane donut.
I wish it had that mode. Yeah, that would be nice. Hyundai, take some notes.
Yeah.
So the GTI, I mean, it's also going to be front wheel drive as well, they're saying too, which is like, so like, what is all this, you know?
Yeah, it's weird.
You a VW guy?
I drive an Audi A3. I wouldn't consider myself.
Basically.
Yeah. I love it though. Like, if it drives anything like this or the other GTI that I drove, if they make the driving dynamics similar at all, I think it'll be fun. But also, the center of gravity is going to be lower. The range is going to be lower just because it's the footprint is not as big. Who is this car for?
Yeah. Monsters.
It's
Sully.
That's the problem here is that they departed from.
It's back to the point about you use names for a reason.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You make cars for a reason. Who's this for?
And they departed from the names that people were used to and tried this new thing that people didn't really care about. And so now, to get people back, you know, you have Schaefer going out and being like, it's going to be a monster. Yeah. And it's like, if you had just been honest the whole time and said how you're going to be developing these things and how you're going to bring the GTI spirit to an electric car and didn't have to like reintroduce, everything's got to be such a big deal now because the stakes feel so high for all these companies. That it's like, it's really sweaty, you know, it's just like really sweaty. It's just like, oh my God.
Well, it's like the YouTuber model where like Mr. Beast starts off with like a 10-foot circle. And if you step out, you don't get $1,000. And now he's like, you have to kill yourself for $2 million. Like, everything is being heightened beyond reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Power figures aren't provided, but its big brother, the ID3 GTI, is expected to make 335 horsepower and come in rear wheel drive, which that sounds like a fun car.
Yeah.
But that has like probably a bigger range, maybe a dual motor option. I don't know.
And to make a battery and a motor combo that can do 335 horsepower from one axle.
Yeah.
Like, that's heavy.
That is heavy.
Unless they're talking about future solid state batteries, like the engineering doesn't quite add up to what they're promising in terms of the dynamics. So.
And they get to say whatever they want because it's not there, you know. So
that's the real sticking point here is, if you rewind to 2020 and think about all of the promises that were made.
Oh God! Yeah.
Next 3 years, next 4 years, next 5 years, we'll have 25 new models. We'll have 50,000 new. It's like We don't know.
You'll have to charge your car once a week.
Like, just, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have, say we'll whatever have 50,000 chargers exactly. across the country.
Exactly.
Everyone's memory is so small right now that it doesn't matter. There are no repercussions.
Yes, but for anyone, for all those listening and watching, like, remember this stuff and don't take it at face value, because all these promises are flexible and on a kind of conceived, contrived timeline just to sound good. Like, I'm not making any friends here right now with what I'm saying, but it's true. It's true. Yeah. Like, you cannot deny the fact that so many promises have been made in the last 5 years that have gone completely unfulfilled. And because there's no recall, we all just kind of like move on, and companies get away with juicing their stock price by saying this stuff, and then nothing ends up happening. Kind of ridiculous.
Dude, you just made me so sad.
Well, you know. Listen, just here with some facts, man.
We'll be right back after these messages.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now back to the show.
EV startup Bollinger Motors is in trouble. If you didn't care about them now,
you're about to miss your chance.
I want to, like, you know, Dillinger escape plan.
The Bollinger escape.
What is the Bollinger escape plan?
Yeah, what
for this
is
conundrum?
The Bollinger escape plan? Well, Bollinger plans once looked promising. Their portfolio included a utilitarian SUV, the B1, and the truck, the B2, that were billed as highly capable off-roaders. They had self-leveling suspension with 10 inches of travel. They could raise and lower ground clearance between 10 and 20 inches. 20 inches is crazy. They also boasted a gear reduction, which could simulate a low-range gearbox. I've seen a picture of it.
I was going to say, let's be clear, none of that ended up happening.
Yeah, yeah,
none of that happens.
None of that happened, and unfortunately, these projects
Remember from before when we were saying how the companies just tell you all that shit?
Unfortunately, these projects were eventually canceled, and Bollinger went all in on building EVs for commercial use instead, and it's not gone well. To date, they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars in making about 40 commercial trucks, which have been mostly gone unsold. Its founder and ex-CEO Robert Bollinger sued the company over an unpaid $10.5 million loan. The current owner didn't even show up for the hearing, and Bollinger won the lawsuit.
This is one of those, like, 40 trucks you've had how long? You know, like,
you've had $300 million how much put into it?
Five extensions on your term paper.
Exactly. I understand your grandmother died. But you've got to get these. You've got to get your work done,
bro. I can't. What am I supposed to do with 40 trucks? A federal judge then put Bollinger, the company, into receivership, which basically means it's easier for anyone who is owed money by the company to get their money back. I still don't really understand it, but it seems like it's he's just like probably not going
to
get his money back.
It's like a pit stop on the way to bankruptcy.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it's like one step before that.
So if they, to be clear, Mullen bought the company.
Mullen bought the company from Robert Bollinger, the founder and CEO. I think in 2021 or 2022. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, for about 140, 150 million.
And if Mullen claims bankruptcy, then they don't owe him any money.
Then it's the amount that it's like their assets get settled and like they can split whatever's left, but sure. It's not like there's a track for them to repay what they they would just kind of if they can't, like, it just kind of
liquefy all the machinery or whatever, the factory property.
Receivership is basically like someone making sure that all the decisions that are being made are in service of paying people back, not like, I mean, also trying to make a product, which is part of paying people back, but it's not like immediate liquidation.
Gotcha. That's why you're so valuable on this show, Kyle. You explain.
Not just a pretty face. is such a like 2020, 2021 company
to
get hundreds of millions of dollars for being like, I have an idea. We're going to make an electric truck. Watch out. Watch out.
Yeah.
And if you saw the B2 and the B3, the SUV pickup that, again, they never ended up making, those were supposed to start at $130,000.
Oh my
for
God.
Something that looks like that has like no features other than just driving around.
Would that be the most expensive like base truck?
Yeah.
Out there?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what Lordstown was trying to sell there.
Oh, garbage Lordstown.
For, remember them? Yep. Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's.
That's what's so funny about it is when this came up, I was like, that's the it's like, which one of these trucks?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What was
there
the
was
one,
so many.
There was a company that GM bought a while ago.
They bought GM's old plants. GM sold them their plant in Lordstown.
Lordstown, though.
Yeah, that was Lordstown. Okay. Yeah. And then that obviously, they had those crazy hub motors. Anyway.
Yeah.
But there was just such a rush to get investment into anything with electrification in the name or the mission statement that no one ever stopped to think, hey, these ridiculously expensive, ugly trucks, like what is the actual market for those beyond a bunch of people excited to put down pre-orders just because they feel like it's, you know, the future. And then when they pivoted into commercial trucks, it's like, okay, what's the actual value proposition? Like if you can buy a class 4 truck from Isuzu for 40-50 grand, I think the B4, their class 4 truck Bollinger, I think it starts at like 150 something.
That's crazy.
And then you get 100 grand in state incentives or federal state incentives.
100 grand?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's different for commercial vehicles. Yeah. But I mean, that's the whole thing we're going through right now is like all these incentives have propped up a market where the prices weren't actually in line with what people want to spend. And then even now, like Isuzu just launched their own electric class 4 truck that starts at like, okay, 120, but has incentives bringing it down. If that's your choice, why the hell would you buy a Bollinger?
Right.
You know, from a company like this,
unproven,
which is also, they're just,
and it's like, you're not, there's the interesting thought of like, yeah, but are you going to be here when this gets up to the company, you know, like, and it's factors into, am I going to use you for fleet vehicles?
For sure.
You can't even tell me you'll be here in a year.
The serviceability afterwards. And then Bollinger's just an assembler, basically. Yep. I mean, Roush does the actual building for them.
Oh, I didn't
did
know that.
As long as they were making trucks. They have a bunch of different suppliers for all the different parts. Like that's what car companies are, right? But Bollinger didn't seem to be actually doing anything that added value after a certain point. So tough sledding.
Pour one out.
I wish someone would give me $100 million for like a shit idea. That would be a nice change of pace.
Just getting propped up by stimulus
checks. Yeah, man. Man.
That's how I get through the podcast. Just get propped up by stimulants. Let's keep moving.
Brought to you by Adderall.
All of this drama has us wondering about a new EV truck startup, one we mentioned a couple weeks ago, Slate. Slate recently revealed that they're sitting on $700 million thanks to huge investments from people like Amazon CEO Bezos, Jeff.
I like it. Keep it.
An article from The Drive notes Rivian received a similar chunk of change in 2019, but also notes that the world and its desire for EVs has changed a lot since then.
And one of those things is Rivian making really amazing trucks.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah.
That's a good model of how to do it, even though they're pretty upmarket compared to Slate.
They put the value there to make it worth the upmarket.
Yeah. And now people like they marketed it really well. They didn't overblow the hype.
And they waited until they had a product
to
start doing that.
That's the thing that a lot of people overlook is that Rivian was founded in like 2012, 2013. Yeah. It was under the radar for a long time. Yeah. And when it comes to Slate, Rivian's investment rounds in 2019 that was just compared to, they ended up with actually a couple billion at the end of it over three rounds. So Slate is, it's a good first step, but like they're still magnitudes off of where Rivian was. And Rivian lost a lot of money, a lot of money building trucks for a long time, and is only now recently starting to turn a corner and generate some income.
Didn't Tesla only turn a profit in like 2019 or something like that?
Yeah, Tesla also, yeah. And that was what Model S came out in 2012. Yeah. So it's tough. It's tough.
How do you, we haven't talked about Slate with you at all.
No, we
haven't.
How
do you feel about Slate?
So full disclosure, I know a number of people who work there. A guy I'm friends with who I worked on my college newspaper together is their head of comms now.
Wow.
It's all big party. But I think it's really ambitious. And I like the approach of like, hey, let's go for like the cheapest possible price points.
Yeah.
I'm not totally sold on the plan to execute on that yet, because for one, like they're relying so much on this universe of suppliers to build all these different accessories. So that all they do is their whole thing is like, we only have one SKU. Like we just sell one thing. It's the truck. And then anything else you want is added onto that.
We'll hook you up, but
yeah. And they, there's a lot of exposure in the way that they're setting things up, where they have to rely on so many different suppliers to potentially complete one order. Like if you spec it out with, you know, everything from the sound system to the SUV kit to like all these different visual customizations you can add.
Yeah.
I don't know the number because they haven't revealed it yet, but you're probably talking like at least 100 different suppliers for just the accessories.
A lot of them coming from outside.
Well,
the
who
US.
Knows? I mean, they say it's a very onshore based supply chain. It's also not spun up yet at all. Like any truck that you've seen so far from the reveal event or whatever, those are all design bucks. They don't have any engineering underneath.
Okay.
So they have just started to validate some on the road prototypes, but they're using like different bodies. They don't actually have the production body on it yet. So we'll see. We'll see. Like I would love for it to be a success. I think it looks great. I think it is really interesting to have like this SUV pickup conversion option. They plan to launch at the end of 2026. That's 18 months.
That's pretty fast.
Pretty fast. And also it's pretty fast, but also a long time in terms of like changing market conditions. And what I think they'll launch with something. Mm-hmm. They'll get a product to market. Whether or not it's a success depends on so much that we don't know right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very skeptical about that $20,000 starting price.
Yeah,
this is one of those.
We're talking about it last time.
Yeah, I compared it to like a Pizza Hut 2-for-1 deal, where it's like it's like $12 for two pizzas. I'll do that, and then after delivery, it's like $65. I'm like, how the fuck did I spend $65 on two pizzas? But I do think that the Slate is an idea that everyone wants to work. So I think there's a differentiation there with some other startups. But then to your point about how many things need to go right for that, like, and you're saying they'll have a product to market. Will their partners have their items ready? You know, like there's so many things that have to go right for that to happen.
And I think there's the question of the range, because it's, you know,
150 on the base model.
And the extended one has a little over 200, which is like, it's fine.
That's a city truck.
And it is a city truck. At the same time, I just got an EV, so suddenly I know everything about EVs, right? Like, I have all these opinions no one else has ever had before.
You're also editor in chief of a car.
It's one thing to pontificate about this stuff and write about it from our ivory tower. It's another thing to live it, and obviously, like when you live something, you realize it. I firmly believe that the biggest stumbling block by far to electric vehicles in the U.S. is a lack of fast charging. Because
and it's not just range anxiety. Like that used to be the thing. It's like, oh, range anxiety. But it's, we've been now saying we're going to have charging stations everywhere.
Yeah.
And while we have more of them, they're not everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're always broken.
Yes.
You know, like it's bizarre.
I mean, cut the cords on like the street corner ones.
The reason why I got the Ioniq 5 is because it came with the NACS port from the factory. It was the first non-Tesla to have the port. So I use a supercharger when I want to charge. And I only got out a couple of months ago. I haven't gone around to getting a charger installed yet at home. So I am using fast chargers like my primary charging source, which you're not supposed to do. But like, don't tell people what they're not supposed to do, right? Like people want the gas station experience with their car. They don't want to, a large portion of them, I'll say, do not want to think about, I got to plug it in at night. I got to set the charge curve. I got to set the max charge so it doesn't overcharge, like all this shit. It's just like plug in, charge, mindless. Go. And that's the whole point of something like Slate, where it is a smaller battery pack that can charge quicker with a lower range because you can keep it topped up. But you can only do that if you can actually get to the chargers and they work. And especially a truck like Slate, which is supposed to be for, it's cheap. It's for people who are at that end of the price range. Those people probably do not own houses or they do not rent in fancy apartment buildings that have chargers in the garage. So they are limited to charging at fast public chargers. And you can see the a glimpse of the future here in LA, which is like supposed to be the best place to own an EV. It's like, okay. You know, where I live, the Electrify America stations, there's like six CCS chargers within a 2 mile. I live up near Glendale. Joe and I are neighbors of sorts.
We're going to review all the pizza places in our neighborhoods.
Tune in next time.
Eight new ones.
All of those chargers, there is a line of like 10 cars deep until midnight. And it's because of all the rideshare drivers who are driving these EQSs, BMW iXs, and they don't live in a place where they can charge at home. So they are public charging. And that's something that's been completely overlooked in this conversation because it's just like, it's a great thing to think of like, oh, you know, like people will charge at home. So this fast chargers in a city is only for people who just need it at an emergency or a pinch. Yeah. It's like people are going to rely on that as their main source of charging. And sooner we accept that and build around that, the sooner a truck like Slate will have a realistic chance of actually becoming useful and being seen as useful for people.
That's a good point. I appreciate EVs. I think it's really funny when you ask someone like, oh, how's the charging? And they're like, oh, it's pretty good. You know, I plug it in and then I go grocery shopping. It's actually really great because I get to, you know, like kill 45 minutes.
and you know, I'll finish up this rant, but the last thing is that, okay, so this has a Tesla port. I have a Tesla port. Like that's the solution. Yeah. That's not going to be a solution when every single company has that.
Yes.
And these chargers are mobbed. I mean, already I'm sitting at the depot in Pasadena. And you can see like it's like sharks. Like you can see these non-Tesla EVs kind of circling. Like because they have regular chargers that are broken all the time, so people pull in, get disappointed, leave. But you can just see that like as soon as all these cars have adapters or access directly to the Tesla chargers, they're going to be overwhelmed. It's going to be mobbed. Like it's going to be back to square one because
and our grid is still not there. Our grid isn't even set up to handle that kind of stuff too. I don't know how far you live away from me, but like. A big gust of wind and my whole block is like out of power for a day.
I don't have that. You must live in the fancy hill area. I live in the flats with the common people.
Oh, you're a flat.
I'm a flatlander.
A flat footer, huh?
flat bailer.
Yeah, but no, I mean, like, I don't even care about the grid. Like, okay, care about the grid, but like, I think the biggest problem is just cost. Like, people just don't want to foot the, no one wants to foot the bill except Tesla because they see the benefit to it. So Slate, we'll see.
We'll be right back after these messages.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now back to the show.
If it were to launch today, the base Slate truck would be the cheapest EV in the US, but cheap Chinese-made EVs are hanging over the US like a dark cloud, In a recent study called the Kerrigan Advisors 2025 OEM survey shows that 3/4 of American auto execs think that Chinese cars are going to be sold here. So it's worth noting that the survey was done before the tariffs. I don't think that's going to affect it that much.
No, it'll just delay whatever we're talking about. But
even with tariffs on top of these Chinese EV prices, I think it's still going to be affordable.
Yeah. And they're also, a lot of them are in Mexico already.
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah, that's the beachhead.
Yeah.
They're building up strength south of the border, getting ready to...
Omaha beach down in Ensenada.
yeah. I don't know how wise it is to use a World War metaphor in this conversation, but certainly that's the entry point to America is through Mexico. And I mean, I don't know. You may have seen... I've seen at least one BYD cruising around LA with Mexican plates that come
up here. There's a new dealership in by USC. I don't know if you've driven past it yet, but huge, like very expensive real estate, gigantic BYD dealership.
I mean, I was on the record saying VinFast would never sell a car in the U.S. And I don't, yeah, I don't.
And you had to eat your hat.
Well, you know, what does it mean to sell a car, right? Like, right. Sure, no, but they exist. They're on the road. So, like, if they can do it with that piece of garbage, yeah. Like, some of these Chinese EVs are quite good at what they do, and you know, it's going to happen at some point.
Sure, it's inevitable. We've been talking about it for years now, and just on the horizon. Big news, Jaguar is on the hunt for a new marketing team, according to British newspaper The Telegraph. Why? I can't possibly understand why. I thought it was a subsidiary of Bubbly when they first relaunched. It looked... the actual like concept car that was on the street in London looked cool. I thought it looked like a cool like low-res kind of car.
Low res is a good way to put it.
Yeah. I just think the whole branding of it is not where it needs to be. So what I'm talking about, last year in preparation to go all electric, Jaguar launched a rebrand campaign that was seen as a huge departure from its roots. The ad was more high fashion than car brand, with tons of models, loud colors, and eccentric outfits, and notably no cars. The rebrand got a lot of hate online for everything from going electric to, quote, going woke, which is my main problem with car brands nowadays. The wokeness. That actually, the Integra that we drove in
that
to
was
Pebble
so
Beach
woke.
Last year told me to wake up.
Yeah. So that's a good woke culture. Yeah. That's the one you're for.
Yeah. How do you feel about the rebrand, first of all? The original rebrand?
Well, two things can be true. The reaction to it being woke, or the calling it woke, like completely ridiculous and overblown.
Stupid.
Like, who cares? and also, a horrifically handled rebrand. Like, just such a botched opportunity.
I think, to the earlier point, I think Jaguar got so used to the fact that a car company can say and do whatever it wants until it delivers a car, that this rebrand leaned way too far into that, where now they've got to be like, we're not serious. No. But we're not, you know, they had to come back the other way.
You could have the F-pace back.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not much more to be said about it.
Of course they are.
The problem was that they weren't making compelling products. No. Like they weren't making, their cars were good, but they weren't standing out in it. And then they tried under Tata to this push into like being like a British Audi, basically, and like kind of upmarket, higher level prices, but still like accessible.
Still performance.
People, still performance-ish, performance minded. And they did, you know, some of their cars were really fun. But they never stood out. And so now it's like, well, what do we do to stand out? Let's just throw everything out.
Yes.
And make a big splash. And I think that their big misstep was is that like everyone wants to be an icon, right? Mm-hmm. You want to be an icon. You want everyone to like, you know, see you as you see yourself. But they skipped over so much of what that history meant. Like, there was a way
what
to...
How did you get to be this thing you think you
exactly.
are?
Exactly. And there was a way to wrap all that in.
Yes.
And they were just like, nah, departure from the past. Like, what's going to be the cool thing is that we're throwing everything out. Yeah.
Like new Coke.
How you feel about pink?
It's like new Coke.
Yeah,
like
it is new Coke.
But that was the best thing to happen to Coca-Cola.
But if that is true, then they're going
to
be like,
oh, I'm so glad Jaguar
listened
to us and went back to what they should be doing.
But secretly, they're going to corn syrup.
And the problem again was not that they needed some crazy concept car like this to get attention. The problem was that their other cars weren't doing the job. And so instead of trying to make better cars that were positioned better, they're just like, well, let's try this whole new thing. This will solve everything. And I don't know, personally, I'm not a big fan of the design of the whatever the OO or whatever it's called.
It was striking.
It's striking. And I have not seen it in person. I hear it looks better in person. But there's this thing going on in British car design right now where they're getting very minimalist, especially JLR. Mm-hmm. And it just like when you take away you take away elements, you leave that much less to define the thing, that sounds like an obvious statement. But the way all that stuff comes together, like you only have like six elements on that car to like hit you and hit your brain, and your brain can process and like come up with your opinion about it. So it is going to be very polarizing, and it doesn't really mean anything because it's disconnected from everything else.
Now that you mention it, the really recent Range Rovers have this element of low res.
Yeah. That's their chief designer's name, McGovern.
Minecraft?
Yes, Minecraft. The head designer of JLR, whose name escapes me right now for some reason, that's his whole thing. I was actually talking to the head designer of Aston Martin about this a couple weeks ago, name drop. When I was like, why are you guys able to build beautiful cars and like no one else can? Like, what's that about? And, you know, he had some very, thoughtful things to say about where they start, the intentionality of beauty, and like that's part of who they are. But like I brought up the fact that like, your other British counterparts are doing this low res thing. And he's like, well, you know, that's their belief is that you get great design through reduction, not like triangulation and really like finding the lane for yourself. Just like make it less, make it simpler. That's beautiful. It's like
sometimes
if you do it right. I feel like Rivian's a good example, but they just basically ripped off the Scout.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a good example of like, it is polarizing. I know a lot of people who don't like how Rivian looks. I think it looks pretty cool, but that is a way of starting from nothing and having a product that looks pretty cool. And right. I don't know where I'm going with this, but
well, versus what we were saying is when you're taking elements away,
yes,
you're losing elements that made it what it was.
Yeah, I mean, songwriting is the same. If you're like adding a bunch of stuff and it sounds like circus music, and then you scale it back and it starts to sound better.
You a songwriter?
Oh, it's so crazy that you asked. can my we new play album. Some of my music? Right? No, I made beats. I made
now I
real bad
them.
Beats for a long time.
You were that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can see that. Busting out your laptop. Oh, check this out.
Yeah. Speaking of beats, Apple CarPlay Ultra just dropped. And if you see a car as anything beyond a utility, then you're probably going to have some strong feelings on it, which makes it even more strange that it's currently only available in Aston Martins. You've seen this before, right?
It's a higher level of Apple CarPlay.
Yeah, it basically just takes over your whole car. It's on the instrument panel. They did a pretty good job in the Aston Martin of making it look like old Aston Martin.
I got hands-on with it.
Oh, really?
Last week, yeah. No, I had a full demo of it and everything. Got to play around with it.
Can you just like take over this podcast and so I don't have to do it anymore?
I'm not giving this out for free. Apple held up an event just to preview it ahead of the announcement last week.
Was this in their Culver City?
No, this was out in Palm Springs with Aston Martin had an event for the new Vantage Roadster, and then they piggybacked off of it to show off CarPlay and a build on the DBX 707. It is okay. So one of the big complaints about CarPlay for people is that if you need to adjust a vehicle setting, you have to leave CarPlay and go back to the native infotainment system. So this incorporates all of that within the CarPlay interface. So you never have to see the normal UI at all if you don't want to. And so you can change the radio, the climate. There's like a vehicle settings menu that looks like, you know, your iPhone menu, but it's all like the various vehicle settings that you can adjust.
I like that.
Yeah, that part's cool. Mm-hmm. That part's cool. That feels like long overdue. Like yes. It should be a complete thing.
It is the worst thing when you're in a map and you're like, this f-ing song.
And exactly. 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 And then there's some punch through areas where if a menu in the native infotainment is complicated or not something that can be displayed within Apple's like design language, like the surround sound adjuster where you can like drag and drop the center of the sound, then it shows like that screen from Aston Martin within like the CarPlay box. So it kind of like leaves the top and side thing, but still shows you what's underneath it. So it's a little disjointed because it feels very different stylistically than what you've been seeing. But the big deal here is the gauge cluster that they finally have convinced a car company to let them take over the gauge cluster.
So, and was that offensive to you?
Well, it was not offensive. I will say like Apple does a great job with design. That's one of their hallmarks. But it was did not feel as like much of a leap as I thought it might be. And when they announced this years ago, so right, like digital gauge clusters are now the standard, right? And a lot of them suck, but some of them are good. And so looking down at your gauge cluster and seeing a well-designed screen and information stack, like it's like, okay, like that's an expectation.
And it's where it should now.
Right? It should be. There are some customizations. You know, there are different screens. You can make one that looks like the Apple Watch bars and stuff. Aston Martin and Apple, what Apple's doing is they like design for these brands they're going to be working with. They design a cluster that is like the Aston Martin cluster.
Yes.
And then they have the stock Apple ones that you can switch to view-wise.
There's like the Moana 2 one.
There's the Moana 2 one. There's, there's all the Pixar ones.
Pompeii by Bastille.
There's less of a, there's less of a learning curve to it, which is great. But it wasn't until I deactivated CarPlay completely to go back to the old Aston gauge that I was like, oh yeah, there's a difference here. Like it doesn't scream Apple. It's not supposed to. It's the brand's expression through Apple's design or whatever. But it didn't feel like a crazy leap. Like CarPlay is like, your phone is on your car. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Infotainment sucks. Like, I love this. Gauge clusters is not something you interact with directly. So it doesn't have that same feeling of like, this is such an improvement over the old thing. Mm-hmm. It's just different.
By percentage, how many Aston Martin drivers do you think are Android guys? And are they going to be screwed?
You could still use your Android interface, but you won't get the seamless. You'll still have to get it, close your f-ing map and
get Android Automotive, Android Auto. But
also,
so they don't have like a monopoly on the whole infotainment.
It still has the regular one.
I had read something. I was trying to understand it, and maybe because you've used it, you can answer. When you put your Apple, so you get in, you do the Apple CarPlay. Dynamic, whatever, I forget what they called it. Everything goes over to your Apple interface. When you then, let's say you don't have your car next time, are you in an Apple CarPlay? Are you like still in the Apple interface?
You don't have your phone, you mean?
Yeah.
So it's a mix. The gauge cluster, there's the first time you pair your phone, it's a more complicated or more involved process than just like connecting to CarPlay. There's like a 2-minute handshake that has to happen where
you put your braid into
the
tail
you grab that, you stick it in the OBD2 port, it wires itself up.
Yeah, you wait for the I see you message to come up.
Hello, Naya.
suddenly you're blue. So the pairing process takes a minute because your phone has to connect to the gauge cluster, not just mirror itself on the infotainment screen. So there's some asset sharing that has to happen because the gauge cluster is still being rendered by the car itself with like punch throughs from the phone, like in stuff, contextual stuff coming from your infotainment, like a map or your song that's playing or whatever. But like they can't control, the phone cannot do that because of safety reasons. Like it has to be rendered by the car.
So if you then go into your car and you don't have your phone, are you still in Apple's interface?
You will get the Apple gauge cluster because that's rendered by the car and you have set it to boot to that initially. So anytime you pair after that, when you get in, it will, you'll never see the native infotainment again. It will start and it will immediately load CarPlay.
The native infotainment or Naveen infotainment?
The Navi infotainment. But you won't get CarPlay because your phone's missing. And so like, it's really hard to get Apple to like talk, have like a normal conversation because, you know, they're very on message.
Yeah.
As they should be, right? You know, that's their, that's their bag. But I got the guy, I was talking to one of the guys and I was like, what happens if your phone dies? He's like, well, you can charge it. And I was like, hey, what happens if you throw your phone out the window when you're driving?
Yeah.
Like what happens to your gauge cluster and infotainment? And he was like, okay, well, like in the very unlikely situation,
like I left
you
it on
throw
my
your
roof.
Phone out your window, you will lose the CarPlay connection, but the gauge cluster will maintain because again, that's being done by the car.
Okay.
So that's how
it just becomes a theme at that point.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just a theme. Oh, cool. Yes. But we'll see how long it takes them to get other automakers on board. They have a big list of people that have said yes, but no timeline for any of that
yet. But also you need a car company that's going to have a new car coming out. You know what I mean? It makes sense for a brand new car debuting that you could do this in their car. But whereas if it's like Ford's like, well, we have the stuff to make our gauge cluster. You know what I mean? Like,
and the reason why they started with Aston is because Aston as a company does not have the resources to develop a full infotainment stack. I mean, they'd have one, but like they can't put the money into it.
It made more sense to focus on the car. Yes, let Apple focus on our interface.
Apple shows up at Aston Martin. It'd be a shame if you didn't have a whole division making the infotainment.
I want to stress that's not a knock on Aston because I love their cars. They build amazing machines and they know what they can do and don't do. That's why they get their engines from Mercedes. Like they're not going to build their own. They tried. They abandoned that. Like, they know what they need to get from other people and they know what they can do. And so it makes sense for Apple to start with them, even though it's like such a limited, a limited sampling in the US so far.
Take note, Jaguar.
That'll get the kids into it. CarPlay Ultra.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for tuning in. Give us a like, a follow, and a review on your platform of choice. Check out our other podcast, Pass Gas, and follow us at Donut Podcasts and our personal accounts. Follow Kyle at Kyle Cheromka on Instagram and other platforms. File
me under.
File Bids Bardo on Instagram and other platforms. And I'm Joe G. Weber. Go to thedrive.com and go to The Drive on YouTube. They're putting out some great videos. See you next week.
Bye.